Chapter 50. It comes in the middle of the night. The hum of an engine in the square, the raised voices downstairs. She hears Madame Fouillet, indignant, and can imagine her in her nightcap and gown, facing them down. She hears them, too, voices carrying the authority of those for whom no place, whatever the hour, is out of bounds. She hears the door slam, another weaker cry of protest from the landlady, and then the old steps ringing with quick, heavy footsteps. The whole house will be awake now, of that Alice is certain, waiting to see who it will be. It is for her, of course it is. She had known it would be. All she can do is wait. They are taking their time, banging on each and every door. Madame Fouillet has evidently not helped them as far as she might have done. She does not need to look about her room to check that there is nothing to give her away here, at least not without an extremely thorough search. The Remington is as well hidden as it can be, in the secret cavity in the wall behind the chest of drawers. She has set a match to any wasted stencils each night over the sink, washing away the blackened evidence. She is grateful now for all the wine Monsieur Dupree produced after the ceremony, the wine that made her too clumsy and stupid to think about typing that night. Otherwise, there would be the usual fresh sheaf of stencils on her desk. Finally, and it is almost a strange relief, the knock comes. Alice doesn't answer at first. She will pretend that she has only just been woken by the commotion, from the deep, uninterrupted sleep of someone with nothing to hide. It comes again, louder, then a thud, lower down, a boot, perhaps. She throws herself from the bed. She won't have them breaking in, an act that would, in itself, seem to criminalize her. She goes to the door and turns the key, flings it back as the man in front goes to strike it again. He falls forward into the room and swears in German, just stopping himself from losing his balance. He is small but powerfully built, this first one. The man behind him is tall and paly blonde, and Alice is unnerved by his passing resemblance to Etienne. They wear the black uniform of the Gestapo.
Alice Eversley?
The stockier man asks. As he says it, he smiles, and Alice realizes that he is enjoying himself. He lets his eyes run over her body, insubstantially concealed by her thin nightgown. But she is Celia now, she thinks. She is no longer Alice Eversley. Should she deny it? Claim that she is an innocent woman with no knowledge of this other person? Before she can decide, the taller man speaks in French, preempting her. His voice is surprisingly soft, his accent good, but his eyes, as he studies her, are cold.
There's no use pretending, he tells her. I'm afraid, my dear Marcherie, that we know both of your names, Alice, Celia. Quite clever. One of your friends has given us all we need.
Who? She knows that it can't be Etienne or Georgette. She prays they will be safe. The one night neither of them is at home. The tall man shakes his head as though reading her thoughts.
We have them too, he says, almost regretfully. They tried to fool us, I think, by checking into a hotel. We found them easily enough.
The hotel had been booked for their wedding night. It was probably easier for the Gestapo to find them there than anywhere else, Alice thinks. The hotels, especially the better ones, are all packed with Nazis these days. The taller man searches the room, rifling through drawers, flicking through her books, feeling under the bed, while the other takes her arm in a firm grip, far tighter than it needs to be. They don't produce anything. It would take a far more imaginative, extensive search to discover the Remington. The man's disappointment is palpable, despite the pains he takes not to show it. It would earn him extra credit, undoubtedly, to have unearthed some new piece of evidence. They escort Alice downstairs, still in her nightgown, and she can sense the other tenants listening, curious and relieved. At the bottom of the stairs, she glimpses something odd, a black shape protruding through the doorway that leads to the restaurant. Then she realizes what it is. A foot. As they move past, she sees the fallen form of Madame Fouillet, spread-eagled on the tiles. Alice stalls, hoping for some small movement that might indicate the landlady is alive,
But the men haul her on, out into the black wet street, to the waiting car. They drive her through the silent city, along the Boulevard de Montparnasse. When they pass the entrance to La Coupole, Alice looks away. The men observe her closely. She feels their gaze upon her. She understands, instinctively, that it is important not to show anything by her expression. She knows she must prevent herself from asking about Georgette and Etienne, about whoever it is that has given them all away. To do so might be to accidentally reveal something they don't already know.